There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, Mr. Tim Dennis. Hello, Tim.
Howdy.
Here we are, our new home, Stitcher and Stitcher Premium, and we've switched now from weekend shows. Wednesday and Thursday is the new dates you'll be able to find us. That means it's easier to sit and listen to us while you're at work or on your way to work or on your way home from work or on your way to school or on your way home from school or, you know, listening to our show when you probably should be focusing on something else. We appreciate you. We've made it a little bit easier to find us and take us along for that journey. So thank you so much. All right. Let's just a couple of house clearing moments just so you're clear. We are now on Stitcher and Stitcher Premium. Just so you're clear, our show is free on Stitcher. It comes with ads. Our True Crime Tuesday show is only available via Stitcher Premium. That's available on Tuesdays. Stitcher Premium for your subscription is going to get you in, get you all of our True Crime Tuesday shows, plus all of our Darkness Radio and our archives, and all the other great content on Stitcher Premium for one low price. If you used to subscribe to us for $5 a month and you got just True Crime Tuesday, your $5 a month now gets you True Crime Tuesday, Darkness Radio, Darkness Radio Archives, the Darkives, and all the other great content here on Stitcher Premium. You can't do better than that. And I've been told on good authority, if you go sign up for Stitcher Premium and use the code word Darkness Radio, all one word, Darkness Radio, you're going to get some deep discount savings for a one-year subscription. So go check that out. Now, Tim, I know there's a little confusion on how they do that and they get the discount. How do they sign up where they get the discount as opposed to just signing up for Stitcher Premium?
Well, here's the deal. A lot of people have been going through the app, okay? So they'll go to the Stitcher app or they'll go try to sign up through iTunes or they'll try to go through their phone. Don't go through your phone. Go to a good old-fashioned PC, okay? Or go to your Mac or go to whatever, you know, one of them good old fashioned hardwired, machines, as we used to say, you know, in the good old days, and go to StitcherPremium.com. It's just that simple. Go to a browser and go to StitcherPremium.com and simply enter that code and sign up that way. And you'll get your discount that way. Because when you go through an app,
and once you've done that, then you can sign in on the app and everything
exactly.
else. Exactly. Your passing code, but then you get the deep discounts.
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of times when you sign up through iTunes or you sign up through any of your apps, it doesn't recognize the code when you're going to sign up that way. So just go in through a browser on a PC or a Mac and sign up that way initially. So then that way you can get your deep discount. And you're good to go. Then you can sign in through your app or however you want to sign in and listen. It's that simple, folks. Nothing complicated to it.
All right. So that's how you can listen and get the deep discounts if you want to switch over. Now, the only difference in the show is if you're listening to us on regular Stitcher, iTunes, all the rest, you're getting the show with ads. By signing up for Stitcher Premium, all the ads are removed. So you get just the show, no ads. And that's what you get for the deal. So go sign up. You can do that now. Let's get started, Tim. We've got a lot of cool news to share this week. A lot of weird stories from around the United States and around the world, as always. Plus, we have your calls and your emails. If you want to be a part of the show, you can call our Voices from Beyond voicemail, 651-300-4977. That's 651-300-4977. and tell us your stories, your real life encounters with any strange and anomalous things that have happened to you throughout your life. Or if you know a story that happened to your mom or dad, your grandparents, your aunt, your uncle, your brothers, your sisters, and you want to share their story, 651-300-4977. It's 3 minutes to record your story. If your story is longer, just hang up at the end of it and call right back. Continue telling your story, and Tim will knit them together into one clean story, so it's very easy to follow. You want to hear what it sounds like? Fine. We're going to deliver for you. Let's take a listen to our first caller right now.
Hey, Tim and Dave, this is Jeremy. I'm from Texas, if you couldn't tell by my accent. I've always been skeptical and don't really believe in paranormal things. I always find everything kind of cheesy. But that was before. So probably in about the last 6 or 7 years, a lot of weird stuff has happened to me and my wife and stuff. And one time in particular, whenever I've decided, and I told my wife, I was like, well, I guess maybe I believe in ghosts now. The way I live in what they call a shotgun house, it's where you could sit on the front porch and fire a shotgun all the way through the back porch. And it used to be an old military barracks. And they built on the kitchen to the side of it. So in order to get to the kitchen, you have to go through my son's room. And then the other side of the kitchen connects to my bedroom. Well, I had my youngest daughter laid down in my bed one night while my wife was working at the kitchen table. And I just kind of peeked in because we had a curtain up. There's no doors. It's just a curtain. And I kind of peeked through the curtain to see my baby asleep on my bed. And it looked like a shadow figure of a woman leaned over, like kind of like with one finger pointed, touching the baby's head. But it didn't look like it had malicious intent or anything. Like, I didn't get freaked out or nothing. I was just like, that's weird. And I turned around and told my wife, I was like, it looks like a shadow, but it looks like a lady checking on the baby. And my wife was like, dude, I seen a shadow. It looked just like a lady a couple days ago. And I'm like, oh yeah. Cause then I kind of ridiculed her, like threw my hands up, be like, oh, it's ghost. And I was like, what are they doing when they're not, you know, busy? It'd be like if they just said some club talking to their other ghost friends, but hang on, I'll be back in 3 seconds. I got to be in a hallway for a glimpse. Anyway, I threw my hands up and I said all that and I ridiculed it and I kept walking. And where the table is, where my wife was working, is the doorway to my son's room, and he was asleep too. It's probably 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning at this time. And then she was like, that's scary. And this, and I'm like, it's not scary. I was like, I don't believe in ghosts. And about that time, something from the corner ceiling of my son's room, like, flew at my head. And I ducked, and my wife was like, oh my God, what was that? I was like, I don't know. And remember, it was directly after I mocked ghosts, and it's like, I believe in ghosts. And whenever we looked to see what it was a stuffed plush toy of the ghost from the Super Mario Brothers game. Boo is his name. But yeah, and where my son's bed is at, there's no possible way he could have thrown that at me at the angle it came in. And then I was like, I kind of just was wide-eyed and looked at my wife and was like, oh, that was kind of scary. I was like, damn, maybe ghosts are real. But anyways, other than that, there's always, all three of my children have seen silhouettes of people who aren't there. My youngest, whenever she was, before she could talk correctly, you know, she would just to be rambling, you know, in a room with no one there, but she thought there was someone there. We've seen the shadow people. There's been a couple times that just weird stuff, like electricity goes out all the time. All kinds of things have happened to us in like the last 6 or 7 years. But, I might call again one day and share some of my other stories. I love you guys. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
See, folks, doesn't get much more simple than that. All right. Ghostbuster star Ernie Hudson, a fellow Minnesotan now, Tim, confirms that Ghostbusters Afterlife is going to link up to the original movies. Original Ghostbuster Ernie Hudson has confirmed that the new movie, Ghostbusters Afterlife, will definitely connect to the first two Ghostbusters classic movies. Hudson, who played Winston Zeddemore in the first and second movie, is reprising his role in the Jason Reitman-directed third movie as well. Speaking to online movie show Yes Have Some, he said, "It wasn't until I got the script and read the script that I thought, not only is this happening, but this is really good. It's really in line with what the fans have been hoping for, and it really ties into the first two movies." The movie will narratively disregard the Paul Feig reboot from 2016, in which the Ghostbusters were recast as an all-female group of paranormal investigators. Despite that, the original stars, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Sigourney Weaver, Annie Potts, and Ernie Hudson did feature in cameo roles. Referencing it in his interview, Hudson said that he enjoyed appearing and that it was kind of a different take on it. This time around, though, the stories center on the Leftovers star Carrie Coon, who, after moving back to her hometown with her two kids, Stranger Things Finn Wolfhard and Disney star McKenna Grace, discover her own connection to the original Ghostbusters. Murray, Aykroyd, Weaver, Potts, and Hudson also reprise their roles, along with Paul Rudd's local high school teacher, who it emerges is a bit of a Ghostbusters buff. And with pleasing synchronicity, Jason Reitman, son of the movie's original director, Ivan Reitman, behind the camera, with Reitman Sr. also acting as a producer. It's scheduled now for release on the 5th of March, 2021. And I'm wondering, Tim, I don't know if you saw this, but Rick Moranis recently returned to acting in a very weird way. He appears in a Ryan Reynolds commercial for his vodka.
Yeah, I saw that.
It's a very strange cameo, and it even Rick Moranis seems to not understand why he's in the commercial.
Right.
But he's back, so I'm wondering if we're going to see Lewis show up in the new Ghostbusters movie as well.
That would be really cool if we did.
Yeah.
Like you pointed out, he's been a bit of a hermit. Is that a good way to put it?
I believe it was after his wife passed away.
Yeah.
And he focused on his children.
Right.
And, you know, his kids are grown up now. I think he's maybe interested in getting back into acting.
That'd be cool if he was. I know we've missed him. So if he'd want to come back or would come back, it'd be really nice.
I really wish there would have been a sequel to Strange Brew with Dave Thomas and Rick Moranis back in the day.
Yeah.
Now, they did appear in the movie Brother Bear, the cartoon Disney film, as their basically their characters, Bob and Doug, but as a couple of moose. But I really wish there would have been a sequel to that. I still love Strange Brew. Campy and all, that is one of my guilty pleasures. That and Flash Gordon. If I'm flipping channels and I happen to find Strange Brew or Flash Gordon on, I can't stop watching.
I own the DVD of the Blu-ray of Flash Gordon.
I do too.
Yeah. I still will throw that in on a...
It's a great movie, man. I don't care who you are. It's a well-done, fun movie.
On a gloomy Saturday, I'll throw that in and watch it. Yeah.
What do those two movies, Strange Brew and Flash Gordon, have in common, Tim?
Oh, gosh. See, you're going to put me on the spot here.
Max von Sydow.
Oh, that's easy right. Yeah.
He's the villain in both movies.
That's
but
right.
But he's not merciless in both
movies. No. Yeah. Of course not. Yeah.
Good evening, Dave and Tim. My name is Dale. And I just got done listening to an older Supernatural news episode. It was a parashare about John Lennon. I'll keep this short and just say that I sincerely appreciate the words and concept of making your aura clean, as well as your well-being and place peace of mind. I'm alone due to many mistakes that I have made over the last decade. Legal issues as well as dependency issues have kept me from my family. My penance I've created for myself has become my loneliness, as well as the sorrow that follows me every moment of my everyday. Of course, I've always wished I could change the past. However, I know that only the present and future can be dealt with this way. I only wish I knew how to start. These problems are mine to own and mine to deal with. And that has been accepted in my mind. That is how it will be. You don't have to contact me if your time doesn't allow it. I can't imagine, or I can only understand this totally. However, if you want to tell me what you think, you are more than welcome to do so, either by email or by phone. I can tell you a story of a 10-minute elevator ride taken at the base straight down by my father to something he had to sign paperwork over. We'd love to hear that story. But he says, thank you with all I have for your show and the truth that it provides for people who believe in subjects that don't always get discussed or accepted sincerely. And I'm not going to give the name.
Okay.
He gives the name Dale, but I'm not going to give any more information other than that.
Mm-hmm.
Because he specifically didn't mention us talking about this on the show, but I think this is an important question for many of our listeners. How do you move on? How do you make the first step? Well, first of all, forgiveness is major, man. I learned that this year in doing my journey with ayahuasca. Forgiveness is so important to your own soul. You've made the mistakes. You've owned those mistakes. That's great. How do you move past them? How do you make it better now? Well, first of all, I do believe you can influence your past by sending yourself good vibes, by sending yourself. And I know this all sounds crazy, but listen, you're along with us on this ride of the supernatural and strange. Imagine those worst moments when you made those bad choices. Instead of putting up an icy block or barricade to yourself and thinking, what a failure, what an idiot, how stupid, hug yourself mentally, spiritually, hug yourself. Give yourself that love. Give yourself that forgiveness for those moments that have cost you, because you will start to heal those old wounds, and that will carry forward to now. Can you truly affect time? I believe we can. Slowly, we can affect time by affecting the way we perceive ourselves. That's my take on it. And from all the guests we've had on, the experts we've spoken to, and things along those lines, I believe we can influence that. But now, more importantly, do what you can for you. Get out of your own way. Get out of your own head. Do things for others. Be kind and just live a life that's worth living. Be in the moment. Take care of yourself. Take care of others. Make this life about making it a better place than the world you came into. And you will get that healing, brother. I firmly believe that for all of our friends out there struggling. I believe that you do have redemption. I believe we're all allowed redemption. We're all allowed to fall down and make mistakes. That's not what defines us. It's, again, how we stand up, dust ourselves off, and get back in the game. So thank you for opening up to us, Dale. And may your heart be healed, my friend. And feel free to email me that story about your father. And you can tell me if you don't want us to read it on air, that's fine. If you just want to share the story with us, or we will share it on air if you give us the nod for that. But take care of yourself, man. Forgive yourself.
Can I add one more thing there?
Please, Tim.
There's a second step to that forgiveness. And the other part of that is you have to truly be willing to move forward. That's the other part of that, too. And what I mean by that is you can't continue to look back on the things that tripped you up to begin with. A lot of people don't want to move forward. They think they've forgiven themselves. And then as they're starting to make strides, and they're starting to truly change, and they're starting to truly turn that corner, they start to look back on past behaviors, and they let those trip them up in their development and their growth. Don't look back at the past and think that that is what defines you, because you can truly start to become something else and be something else and develop into something else by looking forward and change yourself into something new by becoming something new and not reflect back on the past.
Amen. Doesn't mean you have to forget.
Right.
But don't live in those moments.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Live for now. So thank you again so much for writing in, and I hope you find peace in yourself, brother. All right. Our next story, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Our next story. Are you ready for this?
No, I'm ready.
It's kind of a parashare, kind of a news story. It's called The Haunted History of Epping Forest, Tim. Uh-huh. How do you like that?
I like it.
Ghostly appearances, spooky sounds, and bizarre phenomena that seem to defy the laws of science are all part of a paranormal legacy in the wild corners of Epping Forest. The forest's size, density, and proximity to London have made it a popular criminal hideout for centuries. Its dark woods have likely been the site of many hidden burials. Stories and reports of ghostly sightings in the forest are a source of ongoing fascination, with many groups and organizations showing an active interest in the spooky stories. In December of 2003, an episode of the paranormal investigation show Most Haunted was broadcast live from the forest as the crew apparently pursued the spirit of the infamous highwayman Dick Turpin. Although he was born in Hempstead around 1705, Turpin is known to have opened a butcher shop in Buckhurst Hill, and in his later life, he was notorious for using the forest as a base for his criminal activities. He murdered at least one man in the forest, for which he was tried and hanged in York in 1739. Now, flashback to the live broadcast of Most Haunted. Turpin's spirit apparently presented itself to Yvette Fielding and led the crew off the path and into the depths of the forest, forcing them to call a forest keeper to come rescue them. They had originally been filming in Loughton Camp, an area of the forest that Turpin used as a hideout and is notorious for paranormal activity. The site, which is just outside of Loughton, is thought to have been used as an army base by the tribal queen Boudica. I think that's how you say it. And this has led a number of people to think that the spirits and memories of dead soldiers have been left in this area. Now, Alan Smith, member of the paranormal investigation group Parahauntings UK, said there is a possibility that certain emotions may still linger. He said the stone tape theory suggests that emotions and energy imprints itself on the surroundings in a magnetic way, much like cassette tapes, which for anybody that was born after the year 2000, Tim, cassette tapes and VHS tapes mean nothing to them.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the camp would be an area of high emotion. Being a wartime camp, there would be emotions of going to war and being worried about not coming back. He added, you never know what you could find when you go down there. A number of accounts have reported muffled sounds of drums and marching emanating from the forest. And some people believe that this is caused by the spirits of dead soldiers. Several reports have been made over the years of spirits apparently taking material form. They are spirits in the material world, Tim.
That they are, yeah.
In the 1960s, there were sightings of ghostly figures emerging from a pond near Lindsay Street in Epping. The figures were said to emerge from the pond on horseback before riding towards town and then suddenly disappearing. Another pond at an unknown location deep in the woods is said to draw people to commit suicide in its murky waters after two young lovers died in a tragic murder-suicide at the pond 300 years ago. Restless spirits have also been blamed for Epping Forest's most well-known and bizarre supernatural phenomenon that persists to this day. Cars appearing to roll uphill at Hangman's Hill. If left in neutral, cars left at the bottom of Hangman's Hill, at the bottom, Tim, in High Beach, appear to defy gravity as they begin to roll uphill. And local legend has it that this is one of the spirits of a hangman dragging an unfortunate criminal to his execution. A more specific explanation suggests that phenomena occurs because of an optical illusion with the road only appearing to slope upwards, which those mystery roads do appear in many different places, and I've been on one, and it is freaky to see it happen, but it is an optical illusion.
Hmm.
Now, despite the mystery of Hangman's Hill being solved, many people have been left unable to explain their own experiences in the forest and the supernatural legacy of criminal activity and hidden violence that still persists there to this very day. That's the haunted history of Epping Forest. Any questions, Tim?
No, I think so.
Hello, Dave. I hope I did this right and goes to the right person. My name is Eric. Also, please excuse the grammar and such, as I'm not the best at it at all. I'm a hazmat truck driver and regional, meaning I'm home every couple of days on average. I used to be an OTR, over the road driver, which I was gone 3.5 weeks a month. My story in a minute. First, I've got a new phone. The phone I'm currently using is an Apple iPhone 6S Plus, to which I have no problems finding your podcast, which I totally love as I listen to on the road. Been listening for about the last 2 to 4 years, roughly. My new phone is an LG something. It is an Android. Now, I'm very technologically unsavvy, to say the least. I haven't made a total switch yet, but is your new platform on both of your podcasts offered on Android? Yes, it is. As a matter of fact, if you go to your Droid store, the Google Play store, and look for the Darkness Radio app, it's free. Tim, how about that? I'm giving it away free.
Oh, my God. Not really?
Limited time offer. Yep. Free. For now until the end of time, but then it stops, Tim.
Jeez.
Yep. At the end of time, it will no longer be free. We're going to start charging $100 to have it. So while you still live and between now and the end of time, if you download the app, it will be free in the Google Play Store. And then you can access our show and listen right from your Droid phone. Why? Because we love you. All right? Yeah. Yeah. And then he wraps up that little segment with saying, oh, and by the way, phenomena. Phenomena. Do, 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 do. Phenomena. Do, 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 do. Phenomena. Do, 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 do. Pow. Then he ends it with a little LOL, Tim.
Yeah.
Now to his story. My story. This got me to start to believe. I grew up in Stockton, California, and at the age of 7 in 1983, my dad lost the battle of brain cancer. I'll always remember that phone call my mom got that morning, March 18th of 1983. From that point on, I grew up really fast by no choice of my own. Also, from that point on, we struggled mightily. Sometimes we barely had money to eat. I do need to mention at the time of my dad's passing, I was the youngest of two kids, both boys, by 2.5 years. My sister, whom I'm almost 13 years older, came later. This is about where the abuse started for me. After my dad passed, I understand how it was for my mom. She married a guy who was a good guy, but had issues due to Vietnam, so they divorced. He didn't want to subject us to my mind, which was admirable. That year before the divorce happened, we went to Disneyland on a vacation to which my mom and stepdad saved for 2 years. We were walking around and all of a sudden, I don't think anyone else saw it, or has before or after, but I saw what looked like my dad. At this point, I was about 10 years old. I'm now 44. We'll be 45 on September 23rd. Well, happy belated birthday to you. Anyway, he called out to me and looked right at me and smiled. I told my mom, went to get her, and he was gone. Since then, I totally believed in the paranormal and Bigfoot. After my mom and stepdad divorced, that's when it started a whole storm of activity. I had to edit that one, Tim.
Okay.
And possibly before then. After that, my mom had real bad taste in men, but that's when my sister came along, and that's when it all started. No physical abuse, but psychological, mental, verbal, and neglect. From the age 11 to 24, I got that. At the age of 15 through 17, At 17, I did try to commit suicide because I just wanted the pain and the crap to stop. My best friend, we call Beaker from the Muppets, caught me along with my mother. Now, Beaker saw most of it, all of the abuse of which I speak, ranged from 3 stepdads after the first one, after my dad's passing, if that makes sense, to which I've now been diagnosed with depression, anxiety, and now afraid of the dark, mostly outside because of the dark, just the same. I'm in therapy. I've been married for almost 15 years now. I thought I was over this, but after I had gastric bypass surgery in 2014, it seemed to creep up on me again. At that point, my wife didn't know. That's the only thing I never told her. I was always told no one would believe me, that I was worth nothing, etc. On top of that, I'm ADHD, so I'm constantly proving myself. So about 3 to 4 years ago, my wife took me to her sister's house for sort of an intervention. Because at that point, I had a feeling that was going in, but never shared it in front of my wife, her sister, her dad, and his wife. That's when I spilled my guts. This took about 4 hours because of the pain. My wife and sister were both in tears. I was almost there because it's like reliving it all over again. They knew nothing. And other than Beaker, never really told anyone to that point. And that was about 4 years ago. Now, for me, it's not a competition, but I'm sure a lot of people have it worse than I did. But I wouldn't wish it on anyone. Has it made me a better person? Probably. I tend to expect the unexpected. Also, being a hazmat truck driver, it's pretty much par for the course. So needless to say, I have issues with control. That's a bit of a total understatement. I struggle with it every day. Some days I have flashbacks, which aren't pretty. Then in 2004, after I'd moved from California to Arkansas with my mother, an a-hole of a stepdad and my sister, after my stepdad left and took the money to which was left to her from my mom, about a year later, my mom got sick. Personally, I think she knew she was sick. She got pancreatic cancer at a very aggressive state. She passed 3 months later, a month before her birthday, which fell on Mother's Day. Christmas is not a good day for me and hasn't been since my dad passed. My mom took me aside and told me she was sorry. I said, for what? She said, I said, for what? She said, nothing, just that she was sorry. No matter what's happened, I miss my parents every day. Like I said, Christmas, not a good day. I know this goes to you, but if you could read it on air, I'd appreciate it. Sorry for the crappy grammar and such. One thing I have learned in life is this. It's not easy. You have to make your own way and do your best with it as much as possible and with what you're given, and lots of prayers. And phenomena. Thanks from Eric in California, Arkansas. Here's what I'll tell you, Eric. There is some other help out there. You might want to look into EMDR. Okay? E like Edward, M like Mary, D like David, R like Robert. EMDR therapy. I'm hearing remarkable things. They are helping clear people with this very revolutionary, very easy therapy that uses your eyes and movement of your eyes to release past anxieties and PTSD, which is what I think you're dealing with, PTSD. So please examine that. See if you can get some help from an EMDR practitioner in your area. For any of our friends that are dealing with that kind of luggage on their shoulders, that might be something that helps you out and gets you a chance to breathe and take a life back, especially if you had a respite for a while. You know that healing is possible. Please at least just examine that. Go ahead, Tim.
There's one thing I'm really, really shocked about in that entire letter that I'm surprised Eric wasn't told about. And that is before the gastric bypass, that they didn't tell him. And this is quite common. And I've even been told about it in my consultation when I went in and inquired about gastric bypass. They have you go through psychological sessions. And the reason why they do that, part of the reason they have you do that, one is to see if you're able to go through the process and if you'll be able to, you know, not only be able to handle, you know, the dietary part of it and be able to handle the lifestyle changes. But the other part of it too is they stress to you that as you're losing this weight, emotions will come with it. And as you shed these fat layers, so will these emotions come out of you, because there are past emotions that roll off of you almost like as you're shedding and follow me, if you will, here, Dave. As you shed these fat layers are protection. They're literal emotional protection. Okay, so you've built these fat layers up to protect you from the outside world. And it's a physical protection from emotional battery. It's the best way to describe it. And I've had two of these consultations from two different clinics, and they tell you the same thing. And that's exactly what it is. You've built these fat layers up to help protect you from the outside world. But as you shed them, your emotions come to the surface and you need a way to deal with them. And you're right. What Eric is going through is a form of PTSD. All of them come to the surface, and all these emotions that you've buried deep down within you have now come to the surface. And Eric, you really need to find a way to deal with these emotions, because now it's all come to the surface. And what do? You can't deal with that with food. You can't. You'll literally kill yourself. So you need to find a healthy way to deal with that, essentially.
That's great insight. And I'll tell you what, for our listeners, if you go to Darkness Radio and click on the news tab, when we have stories that include video, audio, or a photograph that Tim and I actually find compelling, we're going to put those stories up there on the news site. This week, I'm going to include a little video that's an introduction to EMDR. It's like a 9 or 10 minute video. But for those of you that are dealing with PTSD, traumatic issues in your past, at least just examine this. Because I think there may be this may be the magic bullet you've been looking for. And I don't beat the drum of holistic healing much or things like this, but I really believe this works extremely well for people. So please examine it. And talk to a metaphysical practitioner about spiritual cord cutting as well. As crazy as that sounds, I've had it done twice and I've noticed a huge difference. As a matter of fact, I'm well overdue. I need to get back together with Sarah to have her do a spiritual cord cutting for me, Tim, because I've felt the difference after it takes place. And it sounds weird and ridiculous. But it's worth examining.
Yeah.
So check that out and take care of yourself first and foremost. But I'll include that link to the video on today's news segment. So if you go to darknessradio.com today and click on the news tab, you'll be able to scroll back. We just started with last week's shows. We're going to start putting up the news stories that involve video, audio, or photographs, so you can find those. So you can stop, where are those stories? We're putting them in one place for you so you can find them easily. But I'm going to include the link to that EMDR video. All right. And there might be better ones. I just grabbed a quick reference video to share with Eric, and I included it in his email. And I hope that that will help him as well. All right. Let's see what our next news story is. Shall we, Mr. Dennis?
Sure.
Shall we?
Sure.
All right, Tim. When you say twins and a haunted hotel, what's the first thing that comes to mind, Tim?
The Pfister, Dave, in Milwaukee.
Well, there's certainly creepy stuff that takes place at the Pfister Hotel. As a matter of fact, we've talked about it on the show. If you're not familiar with the Pfister, it's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Many sport teams stay there, and I guess the opposing teams in Milwaukee have booked them their rooms, and they usually try to put their pitchers in the most haunted room so they don't get an effective night's sleep.
Exactly.
If you don't believe me, look up those articles. But no, this is an interesting story out of Liverpool, Tim.
Huh.
Yeah. Ghost hunting twin sisters petrified by creepy goings on at a Liverpool haunted hotel. Are you ready for this story?
I'm ready.
And this has a video. I have not had a chance to watch the video yet, but I'm going to read the story. We'll include this on today's news segment as well. A pair of ghost hunting twin sisters were left petrified after a creepy run-in at a haunted Liverpool hotel. Self-styled urban explorers Lindsay and Louise Scott, 21, stayed at the city's Adelphi Hotel in July and discovered creepy handprints. What makes a handprint creepy or not creepy, Tim?
If you make creepy shadows with it, like
could be
hand shadows.
And they also heard eerie noises during their stay. The girls booked three rooms with friends in the hope of finding some paranormal activity and made videos of their petrifying experience. Lindsay and Louise from the Walton area of the city shared their ghoulish findings on their YouTube channel, reports the Liverpool Echo. The hotel has previously been called the UK's most haunted after other guests relayed paranormal experiences at the venue, which dates back to 1914. The group can be seen stalking the hotel corridors as well as dark and empty function rooms. Some clips show them asking any supernatural presence to make loud noise before banging can be heard. They also point to handprints on a mirror in one of the corridors with what looks like a dusty print smeared on the wall close to the ceiling in one of their bedrooms. Later in the video, the girls can be seen conducting a seance using an upturned wine glass and a candle lodged inside a teacup. The vlog style footage was shot soon after coronavirus restrictions were eased across the UK, and the girls can be seen exploring the cavernous corridors of the hotel with very few guests still around. Louise and Lindsay said it was about a week after lockdown. After the lockdown rules started to ease, it added to the extra scare, and we did take precautions, they said. We've always been fascinated with the supernatural, and the Adelphi was the first ghost hunting trip we got involved in. It was a bonus that the hotel was once named Britain's most haunted hotel, and it was actually on our doorstep. We'd read stories, so that did intensify the whole fear while we were there. It was just mad to read about it and be in that scenario. It was definitely scary. We thought, like, is this real? You will get a few skeptics, but for us, it was petrifying. So I'll include the link up for that story today at Darkness Radio under today's news story, so you can go click on that and find it a little bit easier. Well, since we're out that way, Tim, let's go to Norfolk.
All right.
Okay. Where we're going to go to Weird Norfolk, the haunted house opposite Caister Cemetery. That's what we're talking about. They're here. Poltergeist activity at Caister-on-Sea. We'd come home to cracks in family photographs. I was terrified. That's what one experiencer reflected on. Phantom footsteps on the stairs and the ghost of a little girl cracks appearing in glass of framed family photographs, and the discovery of strange objects from the past. A family got much more than they bargained for when they moved to Castor-on-Sea. Think of a typical haunted house, and you may bring to mind a Victorian manor house in an isolated location, surrounded by overgrown brambles and boasting creaking doors, attics, cellars, and a convenient legend that always keeps the locals away. What probably doesn't come to mind is a family home built in the 1970s close to a busy coastal road, surrounded by similar homes as far as the eye can see. But it was one such relatively modern home that a family of five moved into in 2001. There were five in the household, a mother, father, grandmother, and two grandchildren, aged 9 and 14. And then, Tim, there were the ghosts. Now, we could only manage living there for 18 months, one of the residents, who was 9 when she lived in the detached Caister house, which was opposite the village's cemetery and near to Caister Holiday Camp. Everyone saw the ghosts there. One was a little girl, and one was a very broad, tall man. He wasn't very nice at all in any way, shape, or form. My mom saw the little girl on many occasions, and I saw her once and the man once. We had the feeling that the little girl might have been trying to tell us her story about what he'd done to her. When the family sat in their lounge together, they would be plagued by strange noises, such as footsteps running up and down the stairs, people moving furniture in upstairs rooms, and things crashing to the floor. My dad never believed in ghosts, and then he saw the little girl. And he said we had to move as soon as possible, the woman added. During their difficult stay at the new home next to the sea, the family found themselves under attack from invisible enemies. We'd come home to cracks formed in the glass and framed family photographs, and our house absolutely trashed. My room was the worst. My whole wardrobe was emptied on the floor and my duvet and pillows thrown on the landing, said the woman who shared her story with Weird Norfolk. All doors and windows were locked, and there was no sign of forced entry from intruders. This happened regularly. Nothing was taken, but we sometimes found random objects around the house that were not ours. One I remember well, it looked like a Victorian fire poker. The family dog would bark and snarl at corners of the house, and the temperature would regularly drop until there was a marked chill in the air. If we had candles lit, they would be put out if we'd leave the room. We were raised as Catholics, and my nan, who moved in with us, begged us to have the house blessed, said the woman. The only person in the household who wasn't terrified of the ghosts was the witness's brother, who was 14 when he lived in the home, which we are not identifying as it is still a family home today. I was terrified, she said. My parents were out playing bingo one Friday night, and I literally left the house and ran all the way to the bingo hall because I couldn't stay in that house without them there. It didn't even scare my brother. It was more me. It was me that always heard the activity when alone and felt the coldness. He never did. Now, some paranormal experts believe that poltergeist activity can be connected to one person whose energy feeds from, particularly young people, particularly adolescence. And one of the most common triggers for this kind of activity is said to be in children in their early teens, which believers claim can be channeled by spirits and used to create havoc. The witness said that after the family left the home, just under 2 years after moving in, they felt the spirit of the little girl had moved along with them. We felt like the little girl was trying to tell us her story. She followed us into our next house. Luckily, the frightening man didn't. Since I moved out, I haven't felt her or seen her for about 2 years now, which is sad. It feels weird, but I didn't mind her following us, so she was nice, and I felt her need to tell us something. I feel something bad happened to her. Caister has a long history of ghost sightings. In Mackenzie Walcott's East Coast of England, From the Thames to the Tweed, the clergyman writes about Caister Castle. The peasants believe that at midnight, yearly, a dark coach drawn up by the headless horses rolls into the courtyard and carries away some unearthly passengers. A superstition like that of the black headless dog of Munsley, which scares travelers by night on the lonely coast side, he wrote in 1861. It was believed that if you saw the hell wain or wagon from hell as it went on its journey to collect souls, it warned of imminent death to oneself or a close relative. The legend is that the so-called death coach cannot return to hell if it's empty. So that would be something that's called a harbinger, like the Banshee of Ireland, Tim.
Yeah.
Now, one of Caistran-C's holiday park boasts its own ghost in the reception area. Mary is believed to have been a nurse during the Great War and has been seen wandering around in long gray dress, searching for her lost soldier love. Ghosts have also been seen along the Caistor Bypass. Back in October of 2010, two drivers who were driving on opposite sides of the road saw the same ghost at the same time, a spectral soldier marching along the middle of the road. Both drivers, without seeing what the other was doing, braked suddenly and left their cars to investigate. Very cool. And that's some of the haunted folktales of Norfolk in California, in California, in England, Tim.
The Black Headless Dog of Munsey, is that what you said?
That's what it said, yeah.
Yes.
Black Headless Horses, too. I've heard of the Headless Horseman. I've never heard of Headless Horses.
No, that would be weird. Yeah.
All right. Hey, Dave, my name is Clay, and I just saw your appearance in an episode of Haunted Hospitals. Thanks for sharing your story. Okay. My family and I have many paranormal experiences of our own, but that is not why I'm contacting you. I'm curious, can you offer any insights into the afterlife? I'd like to hear your thoughts. Thank you. And that comes from Clay. My thoughts on the afterlife. Didn't we cover this email or one just like it last week, Tim?
Yeah, it just sounds familiar.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, I believe something happens. I believe we do survive the physical form. I can't tell you definitively what, where or when these things take place, but I believe it, and certainly we cover it a lot on the Holzer Files, which returns this October 29th, right after the Ghost Adventures Tiger King special. So you'll see the return of the Holzer Files. All 13 new episodes are going to air, and I'll tell you, we did have some really interesting poltergeist activity take place this year, Tim, that was caught on film.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty compelling. I'm very psyched for this season, and I'm looking forward to sharing it with our audience and hear what their thoughts are.
Very cool.
Hello, Dave and Tim. First, I'd like to start off by congratulating Tim and on hitting on the important milestone and wishing him a happy birthday. Even though I'm younger than the two of you, I'm not far behind.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. You'll catch First up off, eventually.
Yeah. First off, I recently heard your episode of the Superhuman documentary and wanted to say that when you guys do episodes such as that, it reinforces one of the main reasons the two of you are truly helping others out there who wouldn't otherwise hear about some of the content or ideas that were covered in the movie. I did watch the documentary and was impressed at how they are showing more of a scientific method behind the research. I also like how in one episode they briefly touched on many different types of psi phenomena. I think it's safe to assume that the two of you can remember decades ago that a movie like this one covering such a wide variety of subjects would have been extremely difficult to find and quite often would not be taken seriously at all. Decades ago, it would have taken lots of time and much digging around to try to uncover half of anything about the subjects covered in the movie. I also would like to point out that your reactions and excitement about the subjects covered in the movie clearly are conveyed to your listeners. It's safe to say that's why we listen to your shows. I did thoroughly enjoy the movie and your show covering the documentary. That's an episode we did about a month or so ago, folks. You can find it in our archives. So just check it out. You can go back and find the episode. It's called Superhuman, Making the Invisible Visible. And it is one of my favorite episodes this year, definitely. Not that I don't love all the episodes and all the guests, but that topic really excited me.
Yeah.
Now, the letter goes on to say, now, I did want to add this to this by telling you about an experience that I had a few years ago. It does seem to correlate with some of what was covered in the documentary. Roughly 6 years ago, I was working in the Bay Area, traveling back and forth throughout the San Francisco region for the company that I was working for. Because of the nature of the job that I was doing at the time, it meant that I would be living out of motels all week long and then go home on the weekends. Often the company would be scrambling to find me accommodations and usually meant staying at different motels in different cities all week long. One night I had to stay at a Motel 6 in Redwood City. It had been one of many days of putting in long hours and fighting through Bay Area traffic to just get there. I checked into the hotel, got settled in the room. It wasn't long before sleep found me. Sometime around 4 in the morning, I was dreaming a very strange dream. I was seeing what looked like some kind of instrument panel. It had a silvery gray appearance, much like aluminum. I could make out different gauges on the instrument panel. The strangest thing to me was how the only thing differentiating between the gauges was a multicolor highlight around the circumference of each gauge, much like each gauge had been outlined with a multicolored light. In the stream, I began to try to focus very hard on what this instrument panel was about. And as I was doing that, I began feeling a migraine so intense that I thought my head would split apart. That's when I realized I was awake. Here I was seeing this thing in my mind and experiencing pain and being aware I was awake. I sat up in bed and opened my eyes and continued to see the instrument panel. Even though I sat up and could physically feel my eyes were open, I couldn't stop seeing the panel. I sat there for what was probably 2 minutes trying to get the vision out of my head so I could see again. It was taking so long I began to think that I might not get my sight back, and fear and panic began setting in. Now, if this was the only time this occurred to me, I would have to say it was just a one-off event and thought not too much of it. But around a month later, in the same motel, the same thing happened again, the exact same way. And except for those two instances, it never happened again. I know most people want to chalk it up to sleep paralysis, but funny enough, I've had that experience before, once before, and it was nothing like that, especially because I had no problem moving around, and I felt like I was not fully out of the dream state. When I had the sleep paralysis, I was fully awake but unable to physically move. Now, thanks to your show, for the past few years, I've been researching a lot of different kinds of high strangeness, like remote viewing, and I feel like I was tapping into something. I still have questions, though, like what was I looking at? Was I seeing through someone else's eyes at some kind of equipment? Or was I making a connection to a piece of equipment that was important? Was someone or something else reaching out to make a connection to me? Well, first of all, I'd say next time you go and you stay at that motel or hotel, keep a recorder by your bed, maybe even record, put it on voice activation so anything that's said during the night or is heard will be recorded. But then when you wake up and you see this, start dictating what you see. Are there any markings? Are there any words? Is it English? Is it a foreign language? What do the characters look like? So that that way you can analyze it more clearly in an awake state. Maybe you're reliving a past life moment. Maybe you're seeing the control panel of a plane just before it went down and you were the pilot of that plane. I don't know, but it's fascinating nonetheless. And could you be remote viewing something or some place or even a past life? There's so many different aspects to this that it's hard to define specifically because it's not our experience. But those would be some of the steps I would take to keep a recorder on voice activation near the bed so you can quickly relay the things that you're seeing. Of course, sometimes time, going back to the email, it says, of course, sometimes time will add more and more strangeness to an incident. Recently, I'd been reading up on remote viewing, researching people like Ingo Swann and Joseph McGonigal, which we've had Joseph on the show, haven't we, Tim?
Yes, we have. Yeah.
Many years ago. Mm-hmm. So he's in our archives. When you subscribe, you get the archives. You can find those ad-free. And are those episodes available for free, Tim, but they do have ads in them? Is that correct? So they go far back?
Exactly, yep.
Excellent. There you go. And became aware of the SRI International was only around 7 miles away. Coincidence? Maybe, but a lot of stranger things have been written down considering the stuff that they've been able to do there. Anyway, I would appreciate any insights or ideas of what you think about my experience. Thank you. And that comes from Jose. Well, that was kind of my thoughts on it. I don't know. Did you have anything else to add to that, Tim?
No, I think you're right on target with what you were saying. Yeah.
All right. Now, this story we're going to put up because it includes a video, Tim.
Okay.
A video capturing a Sunderland pub ghost knocking a pint off a table. For those of you that don't know what a pint is, it's a glass of beer. And I'm watching the video right now because I've seen parts of it. I just want to make sure how clear it is before we post it. So I'll post this article with the actual vision of the pint flying across the table and psh. Now, you know what? I got a question. Sometimes these places have chilled glasses,
mm-hmm.
and little balls of ice will develop on the bottom of a glass.
Right.
And set on a table, it'll slowly start to melt and move across the table.
Right.
And then fall off.
Yes.
So that could be what you're seeing. Again, just going out on a limb here. But this does seem to move a little faster. But again, I don't know if is that little ice particulate melting as it's moving and there's a breeze from an air conditioner or a fan that could be picking that pace up. It's hard to tell from the video. Check it out for yourself. How do you do that? Just go to darknessradio.com, click on the news segment, and you'll see all of today's news posted right there so you can watch it yourself. According to the article, CCTV footage from the Victoria Gardens pub in Hendon caught a pint being thrown off a table despite no person touching the glass. Now, the landlord has said that it was the work of the pub's resident ghost after sharing the video on Facebook and Instagram. During the video, a full pint of beer can be seen on a table as well as a man sitting alongside the table. The pint is then launched onto the floor despite nobody being anywhere near it. It's not the first time the pub ghost has been causing trouble. Helen Madison, manager at the Victoria Gardens pub, said. She said there has been a lot of ghost stories over the years, as this building was a coach house before any of the houses were here. There was nobody else around when the pint fell off the table. We seem to get strange things happen in the same corner of the pub. Some of the pub's historical ghost stories include other glasses being smashed, chairs moving, and eerie feelings of the spirits down in the cellar. The pub has since had mediums contact them to investigate paranormal activity. Helen said a medium came in and said, "We have several ghosts here. Among them is one nice one that isn't a bother and one mean one. A while ago, we had a Freddie Mercury impersonator here. He picked up on the ghosts and said that one seemed to be mischievous rather than mean." Do you think at that moment he sang, "Who wants to live forever?"
I'm sure, yeah.
Probably better than that, though. Yeah. The medium said that one of the ghosts only acts up when it gets too noisy. Maybe he was just enjoying the peace and quiet. Despite the spooky events, Helen and her regular customers are unfazed. She said, "We have a good laugh about it. I don't think anybody is too bothered by our resident ghosts." The 19th century pub reopened last June after a refurbishment and has allegedly had its fair share of paranormal incidents over the years. The Victoria Gardens pub is not the only haunted pub in Sutherland, as reports of crying, screaming, and singing have been heard at the Isis on Silksworth Road, which are said to be from the victims of Mary Ann Cotton. Very cool. Now, you know, I will say this. They're not big on ice in England at these pubs.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they, you know, refrigerate their mugs. So I don't know if my theory holds water.
Well, that's
just something to think about.
Even if it's cold coming out of the tap, if the beer is somewhat cold, you can still get condensation on the bottom of the mug that
right.
would cause it to slide. So your theory is somewhat valid.
Their beer is not always cold either. It's weird. Like over in Europe, they just kind of like warm pints, and I don't know. I don't understand it. Maybe one of our friends over in Europe can write to us. Why do they serve things without ice, and why do they serve beer warm? Give us your insights. You can do that by emailing me, dave@darknessradio.com, or tell us your strange and supernatural experiences, your questions, thoughts. If you would like our insights, our unique perspectives, or maybe not so unique perspectives on any of these subjects, you can email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and we will focus on those in an upcoming episode. But right now, let's take a quick break. We've got more to discuss, more news stories from around the world, and more of your stories right here on Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the program. This is the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. It's a supernatural news parashare day. So we're sharing the news from around the world and your stories, both your written stories, which you can email to me at dave@darknessradio.com. And for you newer listeners, if I could just ask you a favor, please break them up into paragraphs. If you have one giant block of text, it's really hard to read. Especially on this. And sometimes I'll keep putting them off because it is so hard to read. If you'd like your story feature, just break them up so that they're chunks and easier for my eyes to read and scan. And just before you hit send, click on that little ABC button, the spell check, just so we can kind of check your spelling, because sometimes words come through that are really hard for me to discern. Sometimes I can fake my way through an email that you've sent if it's not too horrible. And I'm not trying to be a jerk about this, but if I want to share your stories. But if they're really poorly written and bad spelling and no commas, no periods, and it's just one giant block of text, it makes it murder for me to try to read. So please try to just clear it up a little bit and email them to me at dave@darknessradio.com. Even better, because you don't have to worry about spelling or punctuation. All you have to do is tell me your story, and you can do it by calling our Voices from Beyond voicemail at 651-300-4977. 651-300-4977. We'll have that number plastered on the front of darknessradio.com so that you can find it there as well. But give us a call. Tell us your story. That is the best way to do it. Now, maybe there's some of you that don't trust the internet and don't want to leave a voicemail because you're afraid we might somehow capture your phone number and telemarket you Tim's soiled underwear in the future. I don't know. I don't know what your fears are. Maybe you'd like to just send us a letter. You can do that. P.O. Box. Just send it to Darkness Radio. P.O. Box 22321. And that's in Eagan. E-A-G-A-N, Minnesota, which is M-N, like Mary Nancy, M-N. 55122 is the zip code. It's free to send us that letter there. I mean, except for the cost of a postage stamp. Maybe you want to send Tim a belated birthday gift. Maybe you want to send him, a juju bag or juju bees. You want to send him a voodoo doll of Dave that he can poke at random when I get on his nerves.
What's a juju bag?
It's like a juju bag is like where they put little leatherette bags that have good items in it, you know, things that can give you good power or protection. Right. They call them juju bags.
Okay.
Yeah. Juju bees are those insanely hard jelly bean-like things that would pull out your fillings if you tried to chew on them.
Yeah, I don't need those.
Speaking of which, I just watched Taxi Driver with my wife a week ago, and De Niro goes into the movie theater, buys popcorn, a drink, a box of Juju Bees, Raisinets, and Junior Mints, I think, and spends $2.50.
Wow.
Those were the days, my friend. I wish they'd never end. Now you go in and looking at the candy costing $2.50.
True. Very true.
Well, if you're going to a theater, that is. I'm still not going out to movie theaters right now.
You know,
but I miss movie theaters, man. I got to be honest with you. I miss the spectacle of watching a movie on a giant screen. But Dave, I have a giant screen. But I miss being in a crowd of people watching and experiencing that movie together.
I am torn because there's a movie I really want to see right now. But I don't know that I want to risk my health to go see it.
What movie is it?
Tenet with John David Washington. Denzel Washington's kid.
I've heard a lot about it. I haven't seen it yet, nor had an interest in seeing it quite yet.
Yeah, I really do want to see it because it looks really good. And cool. But, you know, being immunocompromised and everything, I don't know that I want to take that chance.
Yep, I totally get it. Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah.
All right. But if you'd like to give us a call, 651-300-4977. That's the phone number. And you could be just like this caller.
Hi, Dave. Hi, Tim. This is Michael Ramirez from Green Bay, Wisconsin. My story is about when I was a baby, but my mother tells it, and my father was in the military, and we got stationed in Malmstrom Air Force Base in Great Falls, Montana. And the way the military housing works is one family in, one family out. So when we got there, we got offered a house, and we had to go basically look at it and say if we wanted it or not. So my mom goes there, and she meets the lady, and they're talking, and she sees us. So it's, you know, fairly mundane, you know, it's the house, so it's all good. And as they're talking, and my mom's getting ready to leave, the lady says, hey, you're going to hear a lot of stuff. I'm going to tell you the story. I killed my husband. Apparently, her husband was two-timing her. He was telling his girlfriend he was going to leave his wife, and he wasn't telling his wife anything. So the two found out about each other, got together, confronted him, made him shoot. He chose his girlfriend. So as he's getting into the car, The wife is obviously upset, and she basically stabs him in the shoulder. He takes off running, and eventually pumps all the blood out of the system, loses consciousness in someone's porch, and eventually dies from massive blood loss. So they went to court. She was it was considered a crime of passion. The wound was proven to be basically stitches. It would have been if he had put some pressure on it and had his girlfriend drive him to the hospital. But it was considered a crime of passion. She got, I want to say, like 6 years probation in her home state, in Georgia. And so that's the story. So my mom was like, wow, okay. So we move in, and she notices weird things, but nothing like where it's right away where it's like, oh my God, there's a ghost. She was a smoker at the time, and she had a little like reading nook in the basement where she would, it was by a window. She'd open the window and smoke cigarettes and read books. And, sometimes the light would just turn off and then, turn and then turn back on. It'd flash, and then eventually it would just turn off. And my mom had CE, which is civil engineering, the base, basically handyman, the Air Force base handyman, come in and check out the wiring, and there's nothing wrong with the wiring. And so she's down there smoking cigarettes and reading books, and one day she feels like something's caressing her cheek. You know, she's not like 100% definite, but you know, that is what it feels like. And kind of creeps her out, but she doesn't really, you know, do anything or consider too much of it. So then one day she's down there reading, and the lights flash SOS to her. It's like, it's either three short, three long, three short, or vice versa. But my mom was like, I'm not smoking down here. I'll smoke upstairs or outside, but on the porch. Then other things would happen. Was one day she was watching TV, and right above the TV, smoke starts to come out, and it appears to be a man's face, like a smoke apparition of his face. So as soon as she kind of goes closer to get a take a closer look, because she was really actually kind of concerned, because when she was a teenager, she was babysitting, and the TV she was watching caught on fire. So as soon as she gets closer, it dissipates. So and she was pretty weirded out by that. She went to her next-door neighbor and told her, and she described the man and not ever seeing, the guy's name was Al, not ever seeing Al, she described Al to a T. Like, the next-door neighbor started freaking out, like, oh, my gosh. And so then, now, all the our rooms were in the bathroom were down a hallway, and it was basically connected right to the living room. So my mom at night would close the door to the bedroom, the hallway with the bedrooms, so she could watch TV. And I was an infant. My sister was like three. And every so often, the door would just pop open by itself. And she'd check, and my sister and I would be dead asleep. So this goes on for a while. Well, one day my mom's watching TV, and she sees like a ghost show. Now this is like 1980, this is quite a while ago, but talks about how when men either bleed to death or freeze to death, they don't realize they're dead a lot of times. And that the way you get rid of them is by saying their name and telling them they're dead and tell them to go where they're buried. So from that point on, whenever Al did anything, my mom would say, Al, you're dead. Go back to Georgia. It becomes second nature to her. So one night she's hosting a few friends, and they're all in the living room, and Al pops the door open to the hallway, to all the rooms, and my mom just offhandedly, without even thinking, says, Al, you're dead. Go back to Georgia. And then everybody kind of stops and kind of looks at her like, what did you just say? And my mom was like, oh. So she kind of explained to him what was going on. And the funny thing is the bathroom is at the end of this hallway where the door is. And she had to walk all of her friends to the bathroom for the rest of the night. And they've been drinking, so it was, seals breaking, So that's what she had to do. But after that night, no more owl. Not one single occurrence. That's pretty interesting. I love you guys. Take it easy.
All right. It's that simple. 651-300-4977. Leave us your story of strange supernatural hijinks. Whether it's funny, scary, heartwarming, maybe you've dealt with demons, angels, Ouija boards, ghosts, the Loch Ness Monster, Tim. Mm-hmm. By the way, we have a new Loch Ness Monster story coming up. He's not taken well to COVID. He's showing up a lot more right now. He must be bored too.
Probably, yeah. I can imagine.
We'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, we're going to talk about the ghost of a man who shot his former lover.
Really?
He's been discovered during a paranormal investigation at HMP Gloucester. Uh-huh. And we'll include this video as well, because in it, they claim that you can hear a voice saying, "You know who I am."
It was Scatman Crothers?
Yeah. Or it could be DVP, direct voice phenomena, depending on if they heard it out loud. Let's find out together, shall we?
All right.
The ghost of a former inmate at Gloucester Prison has been keeping a paranormal team on their toes during a recent investigation. The Gloucester Paranormal Investigation Services, known as GPIS, have had their work cut out for them on recent stakeouts because of this entity believed to be the spirit of Albert Manning. They have documented many intelligent responses to questions they've asked and equipment being triggered at different locations in the prisons just seconds apart. GPIS lead investigator Paul Cowmeadow said, "The entity of a man that we found, we believe is Albert Manning, shot his ex-partner. We have researched Albert after the name appeared on the Alice box," which is a spirit box, "during a previous investigation. We found out that Albert was executed when they had makeshift gallows at the prison. It is believed that he's buried on the grounds at where the kitchen is now for the prison. Manning was executed in 1883. He was caught shortly after he had shot his former lover. Paul said Manning moved in with Mr. and Mrs. Flew back in 1873. He then began a relationship with Mrs. Flew, and Mr. Flew left. However, Manning also left Mrs. Flew and went back to Wales and married someone else. After many years, he returned to find that Mrs. Flew was involved with someone else, and he left work one day and went to the shop she owned and shot her. It is documented that Manning was a very manipulative man who nearly convinced the Home Office his mental health should be taken into consideration so that he should not be hanged. Paul said it has been said that he would be all hunched over and pretend that he was very unwell mentally. On the day Manning was told he was going to be executed for his crime, he stood tall and suddenly acted normal. Manning is a bit of a trickster, Tim. Knowing the past of this entity, they've been able to ask questions which are more specific to who they think they've made contact with. Paul was joined by his partner, Ed Francis, on the investigation, which took place between the hours of 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. on July 30th this year. GPIS lead investigator Ed said, "In all fairness, we think it started when we heard a growl down in the kitchen area. Members of the public have talked about their experiences around there, and witnesses report dark shadows and a darker entity. Keeping the investigation there, when we heard the growl, he had Albert come through the spirit box. It is said that the spirit box device picks up on words spoken by an entity. It is translated through the box, then the words appear on a screen." He said, "We have conducted numerous investigations at the prison, and we think this is not the first time that we have come across Albert. He is very clever. We think he has in the past investigations mimicked a woman and pretended to be other people." What is he, a member of Monty Python? "Yes, hello. It's me, a lady." Video footage shows intelligent responses to questions. In particular, the team have been able to ask for confirmation that they are with Manning using a K2 device. This detects spikes in electromagnetic activity, which is believed to be created by paranormal presences near the device. It is also used as a communication device. Investigators will ask the paranormal being to raise the amount of lights that are on the device to answer yes or no to questions. Paul said, "We have had doors slamming on different wings to where we have been investigating in the past. It seems to happen that way. We will be going back to the prison again soon, hopefully, as we feel we are getting to know Albert better." Huh.
Hmm.
Yeah. So that's that. We have a video of that up at darknessradio.com. Simply click on the news segment tab and you'll find all of the news that has video, audio, or photographs that we deem worthy. Plus, I'm going to include that video for the EMDR link there as well. There's something in the woods, Tim, according to this next email. Hi, Dave and Tim. I'm really into paranormal stories and mysteries and can listen to them every day. One day, after I watched a bunch of videos on YouTube about mysterious disappearances in national parks, I told my husband all the strange disappearances and appearances I found very interesting after he got home from work. He then told me that one of his coworkers' brothers and his friends have had a strange experience in the woods as well. I will name his coworker John for his privacy. 4 years ago, John, his brother, and his brother friends all went camping in the mountains. During their camping trip, they planned on going fishing at a lake, and John wanted to tag along, but the car already had its capacity of 7 people, so John chose to stay behind. To this day, John's glad that he didn't go with them. John's brother and friends parked the car on the roadside and walked downhill on a path to the lake. After fishing for a while, they all agreed it was time to return to their campsite. But when they turned around, the path they walked on was gone. It was strange because they didn't walk far from the path and it was nowhere to be seen. They all figured that if they just kept fishing for a while, they'll all agree it's returned to the campsite. I'm sorry. This is why I need them written in segments that are broken up, because sometimes my eyes just can't keep up in one giant block of text. They all figured that if they just kept walking uphill, they will reach the top of the road eventually. But they seemed to walk forever and never reach the top. They then decided to split into two groups, found the road and the car first, and then go find help. Hours went by and the sky got darker. While walking uphill and searching for the path, something caught the attention of John's brother and his group. Something standing about 15 to 20 feet away from them. They don't know how long this thing had been watching them. This thing looked freakishly weird to the point they don't know how to explain it. The best they can explain it was that it looked like a human, but also an animal. It stood on two legs like a human and about the same height as them. It was so dark they couldn't see its face, but the body had fur and the hands were weird. It looked like human hands, but also paw-like, like an animal. They shine their flashlights at it, and they shine their flashlights rather at it, and somehow the light couldn't shine onto it. The flashlights could shine through the woods and trees, but when it landed on that thing, it just wouldn't light up. One of John's brother's friends remembered he had a handgun on him and took it out and shot that thing 5 times. It ran away screaming in pain and in the most creepy sound that scared all of them. It has 3 different voices in the scream, a man, a woman, and a child's voice, all at the same time. It's gotten late and too dark, and they all decided to camp there and we'll look for their car when the sun comes out. The next morning came, and when they all got up, guess what they saw? The path that they were searching for all night. The other group of friends that were only 30 feet away from them, and the path was right in between the two groups, and they can see their car on top of the road. After they got home from their camping trip, they told their families what they had experienced. John's parents seek a shaman for answers. The shaman said that on that day, there wasn't supposed to be any survivors. They were all meant to be killed by that thing. But fortunately, one of their friends carried a gun with him, and that thing approached their group first. The first thing that came to my mind is a skinwalker. But I'm not sure, since skinwalkers creep me out so much, I don't listen to much stories about them. What do you guys think this was? Thanks for reading. And that comes from Janae. I don't know, Janae. That's a creepy story. You know, bears can look human-like from a distance, big and hulking, and they can stand on their two back legs. Screaming animals make horrific screams that can sound very human in nature, but I can't tell you what you saw. I think it's more fascinating that they went fishing, turned around, and the path was gone, and they couldn't find the path till morning. I think it even more fascinating that you just saw some giant, anomalous, terrifying creature and then decided you're going to camp there for the night.
Yeah.
I mean, have they never watched a horror movie, Tim?
That's true.
When has that ever worked out well for anybody?
Lots of questionable decisions being made here.
Well, let's get back to some more news. Spooky sighting. Chilling footage shows mysterious shadowy figure run past a car in the middle of the night. A Maine man sent his dash cam video to a paranormal activity hunter to see what the unidentified object sped past his car in the middle of a deserted road. Chet Cook was driving late at night in rural Maine when he saw a mysterious shadow flash before his car. He didn't see or feel like he hit something, but the idea kept pestering him to look at his dash cam footage when he arrived home. Expecting a deer when he later rewatched his route, he saw something much more sinister. As I was watching my drive, trying to find the spot where the deer was in the road, I saw the shadowing thing dart out in front of my car. Cook, an IT worker, said, I was shocked. I watched the video over and over. The hair standing up on the back of my neck, he continued. I didn't remember seeing that thing the night before. Cook said he was so disturbed by the sight, he sent his dash cam video to 207 Paranormal, a local ghost hunting group, to find out if they can identify the figure or point to some kind of supernatural presence. I don't know what the hell this thing is, Tim. After the group shared the video with its followers, some took a logical route and claimed it was a bear, deer, or a big cat. However, others were reasoning it was something else. To all the people saying it was a living animal, you can clearly see that it is transparent throughout the whole video, said one of the group's followers. Regardless of what theory the group confers upon, Cook says living in rural Maine means one has to get used to unnatural things. When you're alone traveling at night, Maine can be very spooky. There is a reason that a lot of Stephen King's stories take place here, he said. Cook said, given the state's rich history, there are plenty of markers of its past. There are a lot of old cemeteries with headstones dating back hundreds and hundreds of years, he said. One such cemetery near where I live is known for its haunted nature. Since the stones are so old, people do rubbings from them regularly. And for our listeners, what the hell is a rubbing? They take like a tissue paper, put it over, and then take a chalk or a coal piece of art supplies, and they'll rub against it so that they get the raised image of the gravestone on this piece of paper. So that's what a rubbing is. And that's the more you know from your friends Dave and Tim at Darkness Radio. There are a lot of old cemeteries, as I say, so a lot of people do these rubbings, trying to get some kind of information from the blocks, and that's when the supernatural really seems to come out, Cook says. They will park their car on the side of the road, and when they return, the car doors will be open, or it will have been moved meters away, even though the keys were not in the car. And the car was not in neutral, Tim. How do you explain that? I asked you, how do you explain it, Tim?
I don't know.
All right. So here's a couple of stories that really fascinated the living hell out of me. Okay. Are you ready for this?
Ready.
Okay. Real life inception is taking place as scientists are figuring out how to plant ideas in people's dreams. Sounds like the plot of Inception, but scientists have figured out how to plant ideas into other people's dreams, Tim. Researchers at MIT, Media Labs Fluid Interfaces, have been testing a new technique called targeted dream incubation, TDI, which allows them to insert certain topics into someone's dreams. Past studies have shown that when sleepers enter a rare dream state known as lucid dreaming, they can gain awareness that they're dreaming and can thus have control over what happens in their mind. TDI achieves a similar result by targeting people during hypnagogia, a semi-lucid dream state that occurs as someone is falling asleep. At this moment, scientists introduced targeted information to the subjects of a study, the results of which were published in August issue of the journal Consciousness and Cognition. The study involved 25 participants taking daytime naps. Before going to bed, they would record audio prompts in an app such as a remember to think of a tree and remember to observe your thoughts. They wore hand-mounted Dormio sleep trackers to monitor their heart rate and detect when they entered hypnagogia and at which point they were most open to influence from outside audio cues, said lead study author Adam Har Horowitz. The tracker would then coordinate with the app to wake the participants up with their own pre-recorded vocal prompts. This was repeated several times, with the sleeper recording a brief journal entry into the app each time they were woken up. Simply put, people would tell us whether the prompts appear in their dreams. Har Horowitz told Live Science, often they are transformed. A tree prompt becomes a tree-shaped car. but direct incorporation is easily identified. The researchers found that 67% of participants mentioned dreaming about trees following the prompt. Each time they were awakened, their dreams became more and more immersive. Lucid dreaming is rare, with only about half the population ever experiencing it in their lives. The MIT researchers have seemed to found a way to allow people to shape the plots of their own dreams by interrupting the hypnagogia states. Thomas Vega, a former graduate student, researcher with MIT's Fluid Interfaces Group, tested the Dormo tractor on himself using an audio prompt to plant an idea in his mind. The Oompa Loompas from the 1971 film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory singing their theme song. I started dreaming about being in a chocolate waterfall surrounded by Oompa Loompas singing Oompa Loompa Doompa Dee Doo. But there was a twist. Vega is lactose intolerant and the dream waterfall was made of dairy-free dark chocolate. It was a lactose-free waterfall. I love that song by TLC. Yeah. Don't go chasing lactose-free waterfalls. So is my lactose intolerance knowledge in my consciousness or my subconscious? I induced this dream content, but there were still some constraints, like you cannot just dream about milk chocolate because that's going to harm you. The researchers hope targeted dreaming could be useful for a range of benefits, from learning languages while asleep to curing post-traumatic stress disorder, or channeling it through your Alexa. Or your Echo.
No.
Or any one of those things, Tim, to, while you're sleeping, triggering and figuring out the hours you're most likely sleeping and starting to give you subliminal messages to buy more junk.
No.
Tim, just saying it could happen.
No.
What?
No.
What do you mean it can't happen? Tim, you're part of the conspiracy theorists with me. How do you believe this isn't true?
That's how Skynet takes over the world.
Doom, 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 doom. Doom, 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 doom. That is terrifying to me. The concept that they could get into our dreams and start mucking about.
Yep. That's how they, yeah. Yep. That's how they start taking over. Then they start, you know, with the subliminal stuff, and then they get to our leaders, and then our leaders start changing policy to make the robots in charge. Then the robots take over our Earth, and then they...
And they unleash the zombies. I got you. That's how the end of the world happens. It's zombie apocalypse.
Then they crush us. Then they crush us under their metallic heels, Dave. That's how it happens.
Good God. Good God. In a new peer-reviewed paper, Tim, a senior honors graduate or undergraduate says he has mathematically proven the physical feasibility of a specific kind of time travel. The paper appears in a Classical and Quantum Gravity research study. A University of Queensland student, Jermaine Tobar, who the university's press release calls prodigious, worked with the UQ physics professor Fabio Costa on the paper. In reversible dynamics with closed time-like curves and freedom of choice, Tobar and Costa said they found a middle ground in mathematics that solves a major logical paradox in one model of time travel. Let's dig in, shall we, Tim?
Okay.
The math itself is complex, but it boils down to something fairly simple. Time travel discussion focuses on closed time curves, CTCs, something Albert Einstein first posited. Tobar and Costa said that as long as just two pieces of an entire scenario within a CT are still in casual order when you leave, the rest is subject to local free will. Our results show that CTCs are not only compatible with determinism and with the local free choice of operations, but also with a rich and diverse range of scenarios and dynamical processes, their paper concludes. In a university statement, Costa illustrates the science with an analogy. Say you traveled in time in an attempt to stop COVID-19's patient zero from being exposed to the virus. However, if you stop that individual from becoming infected, that would eliminate the motivation for you to go back and stop the pandemic in the first place. This is a paradox, an inconsistency that often leads people to think that time travel cannot occur in our universe. Logically, it's hard to accept because that would affect our freedom to make any arbitrary action. It would mean that you can time travel, but you cannot do anything that would cause a paradox to occur. Some outcomes of this are grouped as the butterfly effect, which refers to unintended large consequences of small actions. But the real truth in terms of the mathematical outcomes is more like another classic parable, Tim.
Hmm.
That of the monkey's paw. Be careful what you wish for and be careful what you time travel for, Tobar explains in the statement. In the coronavirus patient zero example, you might try and stop patient zero from becoming infected, but in doing so, you might catch the virus and become patient zero, or someone else would. No matter what you did, the salient events would just recalibrate around you. Try as you might to create a paradox, the events will always adjust themselves to avoid any inconsistency. While that sounds frustrating for the person trying to prevent a pandemic or, say, kill Hitler, for mathematicians, it helps to smooth a fundamental speed bump in the way we think about time. It also fits with recent quantum findings from Los Alamos, for example, and the way random walk mathematicians behave or mathematics behave in one or two dimensions. At the very least, the research suggests that anyone eventually designing a way to meaningfully travel in time could do so and experiment without an underlying fear of ruining the world, or at least not right away, Tim. But absolute power tends to corrupt absolutely, Tim. So I'm guessing that somebody with the ability to time travel is eventually going to muck things up.
So in the example of killing Hitler, you don't kill Hitler, you kill Goebbels. Does that necessarily...
Why do you kill gerbils, Tim?
Not gerbils, Dave.
Why are
not,
you picking out gerbils?
Not gerbils, Goebbels, Dave. Goebbels, his
The baby food company? You're going to shut them down? Because what, if Hitler doesn't eat Gerber baby food, he doesn't grow up to be maniacal?
Not Gerber, Dave. Goebbels, his... Forget it.
I'm with you. Go ahead. So, go ahead. You go back and what with Gerber, Goebbels?
Not Goebbels. Okay. So you kill Goebbels instead of Hitler. You're saying that necessarily doesn't change the timeline any, or maybe it makes things worse. Maybe it drives Hitler incredibly insane and it doesn't necessarily fold Germany or Germany's war effort. Maybe it intensifies Germany's war effort. And they maybe even take over the world because of that.
Yeesh. Did you hear me, Tim? Yeesh.
Yeah.
It's no good. Time travel is a spooky thing. I'd love for it to be real. I think it is real, truthfully. I do believe time travel is happening.
You think? I don't know.
I think that's why things seem out of sorts from time to time. Like, there's been a correction that's taking place, like a wave crashing against the shore, that somebody went back and did something. That's why I said, I believe you can heal yourself through time travel. I believe you can send back good, positive thoughts and intention to those moments instead of focusing on the negativity of the moments in your past. If you send those moments good positivity, you can heal, give yourself attention, love, and forgiveness in those moments, which can slowly affect your life. So I think time travel within your own lifetime is safe. Because you can alter and change parameters. However, I sit there and I ask myself that question. If I did those moments, if I fixed those bits of me back then that would then put me on a different road, would I have married the women I married? Would I have made the choices I've made? Would I have had the children I've had? Because I wouldn't want to change it. No matter how much pain some of those relationships brought me, how much anguish and PTSD I might still deal with in some cases, I wouldn't want to lose any one of my kids. Well, one of them. But I wouldn't want to lose most of them.
Now, you know what's going to happen is those kids are going to hear this broadcast and go, I wonder if...
And they're all going to know who I'm talking about, Tim. They're all going to know.
You think so?
Well, yeah, because they all think it's the other kid. None of them think it's them. I've bred the perfect life here, Tim, so that they all believe they're my favorite child.
You've built the perfect Faraday cage. They're all trapped inside.
Exactly. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. Did you have more? Sure. Please.
Oh, no, I was going to expound on the point of
killing
killing gerbils. Yes. The perfect way to kill a gerbil. No, just that if you change that past, even one, and I'm talking about, you know, the whole dating scenario, if you change even just one of them, that maybe you do still end up on that path, but you just happen to be just a little bit happier. I truly believe you could throw out just one and still end up on that path. I think it could happen. I'm not saying I'm willing to go back and find out, But
no?
I think there are key ones that truly do damage you enough to change the entire scenario to make you want to, you know, that do develop character, so to speak. But there are also, I don't want to say meaningless ones. Do you know what I mean?
With you.
But, you know, there are ones that aren't as impactful. Let's put it that way. There are relationships that aren't as impactful that you go, yeah, you know what? It didn't really, you know, damage the old psyche enough to be a turning point in my life.
I gotcha.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have never eaten the first McRib, Tim. That's what I would stop myself from so that I'm not craving it 50 years later and not able to get it. That would be something I would butterfly effect.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Huh.
All right, we have two final stories, one weirder than the other, but let's dive into them, shall we, Tim?
Sure.
Loch Ness Monster. Nessie has made quite a few appearances in 2020, Tim. Well, Corey Sturrock and his wife had been out for a walk when they spotted something very large in the water. The encounter, which took place on Saturday at around 3:40 p.m. this past week, while the couple were walking along the shoreline at Doors, a small village on the northeastern side of the loch. I've been camping and walking on Loch Ness my whole life, and I've never believed in the Loch Ness monster, said Corey. But what my wife and I saw was something quite extraordinary, and I would like to know if other people have seen the same thing. He describes the creature as eel-like, but also the size of a bus.
Jeez.
We saw the water rippling as if something was swelling, and that's what grabbed our attention, he said. When we saw the thing, that looked like a massive eel rise out of the water, then go back under. And it was this huge swell. The same thing was also witnessed by several people who had been walking nearby. Sadly, however, Corey was unable to capture the spectacle on camera. I reached for my phone, and it was all over in a matter of 10 to 20 seconds. And it only showed itself for a few of those seconds, he said. By the time I got my phone out, it had gone underneath again. As for what the creature was, Corey is skeptical that it was a literal monster, but believes that it could have been some sort of large eel that lives in the loch. Whatever it was huge, he said.
Hmm.
Well, that does make it a monster, right? It's a huge eel. Why can't that be the Loch Ness monster? Remember, all cryptids are only cryptozoological until they're discovered, then become zoological.
Yeah.
All right. Our final story, Tim. This is a head scratcher.
Okay.
Ready for this?
Ready.
Tesla. Nikola Tesla?
Mm-hmm.
Was from Venus, according to an FBI document, Tim.
What?
A rather peculiar claim concerning Nikola Tesla has been found in the archives of the FBI's official website. Are you ready for this?
Ready.
There are a few people who have contributed more to the widespread implementation. That's a big word, Tim. Let me try that one again. I'm going to take a running start at it.
Okay.
There are a few people who have contributed more to the widespread implementation of electricity in the world than Tesla, a man whose accolades range from pioneering the use of alternating current to conducting experiments designed to transmit electricity wirelessly through the air. Back in 1905, he submitted a patent entitled The Art of Transmitting Electrical Energy Through the Natural Medium, which was founded on his belief that the Earth itself is a giant electrical generator that could be harnessed to provide practically limitless amounts of electricity. There's no denying that Tesla was way ahead of his time. However, it seems that there are some who believe that his penchant for science and electricity had a more otherworldly origin. In a now declassified FBI document entitled Interplanetary Sessions Newsletter and dated June 14th of 1957, there's a paragraph which claims, quite bizarrely, that Tesla came from the planet Venus. The space people have visited Tesla engineers many times, it reads, and have told us that Tesla was a Venusian, brought to this planet as a baby in 1856 and left with Mr. and Mrs. Tesla in a remote mountain province, which is now Yugoslavia. All right?
Mm-hmm.
You still with me on this mission, Tim?
So far, yeah.
This apparent revelation was allegedly received by someone named Margaret Sturm, who, according to the file, had been assigned to work with the space people. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's where we're at so far in the story, Tim. She had been tasked with writing a book about Tesla's life and had received information on him through a device that he had developed in 1938 to facilitate interplanetary communication. If this all sounds ridiculously far-fetched, then that's because it almost certainly is. However, it is interesting that the FBI would actually have a document in its archives detailing the fact that they believe that he may be from Venus. I don't even know what to say about that, Tim. So Nikola Tesla from Venus, that's what you got on your hands.
Okay, but now last week we read a story mm-hmm. in which it stated that the atmosphere of Venus is like extremely acidic and the ground temperature is something like 800 degrees. So you mean to tell me that Nikola Tesla came from this extremely acidic atmosphere in swelling ground temperatures to good old Earth and somehow didn't look like some weird demonic beast? Just saying. Look completely human, humanoid.
Maybe it's like this, though, Tim. Maybe it's depending on the host. Maybe whatever seed would have been implanted in Venus and Venusians, it would grow up to be a being that would be like that. But maybe this thing was harvested here and this baby was left with them, but it has Venusian DNA. I don't know. Are there any relatives of Tesla that we could test? Direct relatives? Did he have kids? I don't think he did.
But there's got to be someone somewhere in the bloodline, you would think.
Yeah, but not necessarily, because remember, if he was given to the Teslas to raise, like Clark Kent, there would be no, you could test his parents, but they wouldn't have the Venusian byline. It would have to come from Tesla. He would have to have spread his own seed in order for that to be found.
You would think.
So if you are a relative of Tesla, a blood relative directly from him, let us know. Tim will, out of pocket, pay for your blood test to see if you're Venusian. Yep. That's the story. That's it for this week. Thanks a lot for tuning in to the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio Supernatural News Parashare Edition. We'll be back tomorrow with an amazing interview you do not want to miss right here on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm Dave. That's Tim. This is Darkness Radio.